There it is. And it switched me back. Why does it keep doing that? Whatever. Anyways, we're here. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Daily Cup of Genre. It's the morning show where we talk about everything going on in geek world, entertainment world, movies, television, gaming, the whole nine yards. And I mean, let's face it, Marvel and Star Wars are just staying in the spotlight recently, all up in it. I am one of the normal hosts for this show, Kyle Malone, and I'm not joined by my other normal host, Manny. Instead, I'm joined by Shocky. What's up, dude?
Not too much. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I feel like I'm slowly becoming part of the crew now and stuff.
And yeah, I kind of, you know, I came in a few years ago writing, which, hey, if anyone out there's listening, if you've ever had the urge to write down your conversations instead of just, you know, speaking, send something our way and we'll take a look at it. We're always interested in new points of view and stuff here at LRMonline.com. Man, Star Wars.
Oh, boy.
And Disney Plus, like I kind of, you know, I always jump around on the topics, especially live when I create the tweets and all of that. I lay them out in an order, but I don't necessarily go that way. And one thing's been on my mind about the Disney Plus thing the last couple weeks, and the Black Widow numbers and the viability of future day and date release. For context for all of those, Disney came out the gate last week. The first weekend Black Widow was open and was touting some what you could call appear to be good numbers, but in full context we won't know until we see how things like the Suicide Squad performs. How does Shang-Chi perform? We gotta wait on some more context than Fast 9 and Black Widow. People trying to spin them as good, not wholly, you know, honest, and people trying to spin them as just bad, again, not wholly honest. But one thing is for certain, Disney didn't release any Disney Plus numbers for the second weekend. And when you did some math, taking the amount of money they claimed was made from Disney Plus versus the amount of subscribers, it was like, what, 2 million and change households out of 103 million total subscribers?
Right. So, yeah, it was. We did the average because we asked Cam, who was in Scotland, how much the price was for the premier access of Black Widow, and then kind of looking around, it averaged out to about like $25 US that the average paying household was for Black Widow. So when you take into account how much money they claimed was in that opening weekend, you know, and how much the average is charged, we're looking roughly, you know, just a couple million subscribers there, you know, out of 110 million was, you know, just their most recent announcement of how many subscribers. So I don't know, like, is that a good number? You know, do they consider that a success? You know, when we talk about conversion rate, you know, going from somebody clicking on a social media link to, you know, a story, we're happy when it's at 2%, you know, it's crazy. So are they happy with that number? Or, and you got to assume that, you know, households probably had an average of four people in that household. So are you getting your bang for your buck on that? And I think there's a little hidden message that the reason why they didn't send out a second weekend update from Black Widow is that we saw a massive drop off in the movie theater box office. So you got to assume there's got to be a drop off as well as premier access.
Right.
And the quality of the pirated version of Black Widow out there,
massively well. Yeah. And it's been that way for all of HBO Max's day and date releases. It's going to be that way for all of them. There's just it's impossible. I don't condone piracy. I don't partake in it. I try my best to at least see what's out there to, you know, report on. And you're right. I've looked at the screenshots that you can find attached to the different torrents, just out of curiosity. Like, are people able to get these rips? Because when you go in and say like we're trying to get a screenshot from a Disney Plus show for an article, that's completely legal to do. Correct. However, all of the digital protections on Disney Plus make it difficult to get even a legal screenshot, you know, let alone someone ripping the whole thing, but they're doing it. So that being said, Matt, you know, they said that Disney said they wouldn't rule out Shang-Chi being on Premier Access, but it's not on the schedule for it right now.
Correct.
I'm thinking Jungle Cruise is the last live action day and date we get. What do you think?
From Disney, yes. I think that it's, you remember, they're in the money business, right? Mm-hmm. That's the whole name of the game. And another thing too, wasn't it, it was a couple months ago, right? It was right in the middle of the pandemic when HBO announced that they were going to release all their movies, you know, day and date and stuff, that the agreement was that they would, movie theaters would reduce the window to, on access, you know, and everything. They shortened it, right, to like, what, 30 days or something?
Different studios made different deals, yeah.
Right. So I think what you're going to see is you're going to try to see movie theaters and studios try to get the most bang for their buck, get, you know, their movies into the movie theater and, you know, try to capture some of that audience in that first 30 days. And there's just going to be groups of people that just are going to wait. You know, if it's going to come to Disney Plus in 30 days or HBO Max or Amazon Prime, they're going to wait. You're not going to convince somebody to go to the movie theaters if they got to just wait 1 month.
Yeah.
You know, it's unless it's something like Avengers Endgame where it's an event.
Right.
Then you have the masses come out to the movie theaters. But for right now, I think that ultimately you're looking at, you know, this the Jungle Cruise being the last one, studios revamping. I think HBO is, or Warner Brothers, I mean, sorry, is kind of regretting sending out every single movie for 2021 is going to be out on HBO Max, you know, same time as theaters. Because they, you know, what was it, Kong versus Godzilla was the most profitable Warner Brothers film so far. And they've had a lot. Every month they released a film. And so that's for them, that's not a good sign, you know. But
no, not at all. But I wonder, because they it's not like they made a deal with another company. Right. I don't know, you know, with certain production studios and companies, and I know distribution could be contractually questionable, but I know a lot of these are like in-house productions through and through.
Right.
So what are they afraid of saying, hey, we're not going to release X, Y, and Z, you know, in September, October, November on day and date? We're just, you guys are going to the theaters. That's what, are they afraid that the fans will be upset and dump the streaming service, or
possibly?
I mean, would you?
If they came out
and said, hey, Dune is not going to be on HBO Max. We're going to just do that theaters only. How many people would actually drop HBO Max because of that?
A few would definitely. But I don't, I think that everybody's kind of, I think what we've seen is in 2000 and pre-pandemic, we saw a flooding of streaming services, right? We had all these different, you know, YouTube had its own, you know, original platform that they've gotten rid of. DC did their own, you know, streaming service that they eventually had to, you know, merge into with HBO Max. WWE did its own. They finally merged with Peacock. Yep. You're seeing that, like, you know, pretty much all these streaming services are starting to merge into the core, like, say, five, right? So I think now what's happening is people are choosing between the five major streaming services, which ones they want, some all five, some three out of five, and so forth. But I don't think it's driven so much, maybe HBO Max a little bit, Some are driven that because they get the day and date of the movie release, but there's a big catalog for HBO Max that you can go in and watch other movies. So I think, I don't think it's profitable for them. They're trying to play both sides. They're trying to do the Netflix, where Netflix has its own studios and it's coming out with its own movies on streaming service and it's right there. They're trying to, do the Netflix thing, but also try to make as much money as possible, because there's still nothing that will replace the box office from the movie theaters in profitability. So
that's true. 100%.
Yeah, there's nothing yet. I mean, and I think Disney was trying to do this with Premier Access. Like, hey, we'll charge an average of $25 to see it, because you have to have a subscription already to Disney Plus. So, and then on top of that, pay, extra. So, I mean, it's almost like they're trying to use the UFC model, where the UFC, you have an ESPN Plus subscription, and then you have to pay, on top of that, you get a semi-discount. It's not much, but a discount for the pay-per-view. But I think that's such a niche. I mean, people have been paying pay-per-views for UFC forever. Yeah, so that's nothing. That's not a new norm. So trying to do that, it's, I don't know.
It's been one of those, big conversations and concerns that I've been talking about for years, as I watched, regular theater numbers dwindle, regular screens become less filled, to where it's now like on an opening night for almost any non-Avengers movie, Marvel movie, is if you got a 12 screen theater, at least 4 or 5, almost half are going to be playing that movie. And when you get to an Avengers level movie, it starts being like 6 or 7 screens, right, especially opening weekend.
Right.
And you remember Jurassic Park in what was it, 93, 92? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. And you remember having to wait almost a year from the time it hit theaters to the time you could buy your VHS, that beautiful black box with the red logo and the T-Rex.
People that was an event too.
Going and
buying a movie, or going to Blockbuster
and renting. Yeah,
and renting, that was an event as well. I mean, the best example, you went with Jurassic Park, Batman 89. I mean, going to the movie theater, seeing Batman 89, and then it took forever for it to come out on VHS because it had such, just like Jurassic Park, it had such a long run in the theaters that then once it came out, everybody's rushing to buy the VHS. And then that was in its own experiences as well. I remember every Friday night we're going over to Blockbuster with the family, trying to look for the latest movie that came out that week to rent to watch that night. The trailers added to the, remember, so we had movie trailers at the theaters, but then also trailers added to the VHS, which was an experience on itself. The Power Rangers movie. Yeah. Remember the first trailer was I forgot what VHS it was. You had to buy a VHS to watch the Power Rangers movie trailer. So that's a lot different. Was
very, very rare. And very rare. It's not bad, but what part of what worried me was looking at that shrinking of time from theater release to home video release, and it's gotten shorter and shorter. The average a few years ago was maybe 6 months. To 8 months for movies, because people were still watching them in theater, 90 days in, 100 days in. Now you look at it, and we used to look at something having a 40% drop as bad. And then we said, okay, well, that's now the new normal. So 50% or higher drop is bad. Well, that's almost now the new normal for these big movies that make hundreds of millions on opening night. And it's gotten shorter as studios realize, and as theaters realize, we got to make room for more stuff, because people aren't hanging around and watching one thing as long as they used to.
Right.
The last several Marvel films before the pandemic all hit from theater release to digital, I think in four months or less, the last couple of years.
Yeah. And what you got to also remember too, is that in that time frame you're talking about, where it was a long time before you got to at home a VHS, was that you had dollar theaters. mm-hmm. you know, where basically that was the last run yes. for a movie to make any profit left. You know, you basically yeah. charge $1, $1.50, and that was basically the box office trying, you know, the studios trying to yep. squeeze out the last little penny that they would get from the theater services. And
theaters trying to get that extra popcorn sold.
Right, exactly. And those have basically gone away. And the pandemic, I think, pretty much destroyed any type of dollar theater experience. And I haven't seen a dollar theater in a long time.
Yeah.
Drive-in theaters, it's rare now. Drive-in theaters were kind of the other, you know, depending on where you live, you know, in the United States, they're not as popular anymore. And that was kind of this, you know, because you would get a double feature, you know, most mm-hmm. and most drive-ins. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's sad. So yeah, we're getting shorter and shorter into this window. That means studios are going to have to produce better. They're going to have to make a decision. What needs to go straight to streaming services and what needs to go to the, you know, the movie theaters. And so, the ones that go to the movie theaters, the ones that are big box office draws, you're going to make your money on that. But like a Luca, you know, animated film from Disney, mm-hmm. would that have been a big box office draw? Who knows? You know, right off the bat, pre-pandemic, maybe. But now with Disney Plus, and now that option of, hey, we can just send it straight to Disney Plus, now you're going to get people subscribing, saying, oh, there's some new animated films on there. Let's subscribe to Disney Plus. And so then little by little, you're getting $6 a month from me, you know, because I found Luca, and then, oh, here's another film we haven't seen. Oh, here's another. So we're stuck on there. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's where Disney, you know, Warner Brothers, they're going to have to make that decision. And so I think you're going to see a lot of more indie films hitting to the box office. I think, you know, independent films are, you know, going to take advantage of this time and head to the, you know, release in theaters, and because there'll be very little competition. And then the studios are going to say, all right, we're going to send Batman, to the theaters. But this animated film that we had that was, you know, received a mediocre, you know, lukewarm reaction, we're going to send it to HBO Max.
That is an interesting thought of the theaters becoming I don't want to say adult playground, but a grown up. We'll just say people over, you know, teenagers and older. One reason I know a lot of people always complain about family friendly movies is the families that bring in kids, and they either A, refuse to control their kids, or B, refuse to leave.
Right.
Which I get it. You paid money. You took the time. However, you're in a room with a lot of other people. My wife and I, we're the ones that we never want to ruin anyone else's date night, because we've had ours ruined. So whenever our son would misbehave at a restaurant or theater, we get our stuff to go, eat the loss, and carry on if we can't get control of it, you know. But that idea alone, that's a really interesting one. Get it to where your you know, PG-13 and over big movies, indie films are all up in the theaters. That would fall in line with my theory that a lot of theaters are going to go to the premium experience, like your Alamo Draft Houses, things where you got every seat's a recliner and mm-hmm. stuff, where all of your kid friendly and you know, PG and below films hit home. Like, that's it. That's interesting. I wonder what that would mean.
Think about it. How many, let's look at, besides AMC and Regal Cinemas, most theaters now are kind of adult-ish. You know, you have those luxury seats, you know, the Alamo Draft Houses and the other indie, you know, movie theaters, they have it so that, you know, the recliner seats are like their office chair type seats. They serve alcohol there. You know, it's not just, you know, popcorn and, you know, old nachos and cheese. It's
almost like elevated food. 3-hour event for a two-hour movie.
It's a lot more expensive. You know, tickets are, you know, $10 to $20 just to get to see the film. The, you know, the beer or alcohol, you know, costs money. So, it's a good date night. It's a good, you know, escape with your significant other and you go. But you're right. It's not family, like even AMC is not really necessarily a family friendly event anymore because like the seats are all spread out, you know, they're, it's not close. And like you said, sometimes that, you know, kids are loud, kids are enjoying the movie. And it's something that like, hey, not everybody's, you know, enjoying that. Cause my daughters are the same way. Or like my daughters don't even like really going to the movie theaters that much because they'll lay down and watch a film, but then they get bored, you know, halfway through if they don't like it. And then they're like, can we go? Yeah. And so, yeah, I think that it's good. We're looking at a transition to changing theaters to be more adult oriented. The AMC that's over by my house has a bar outside of, like, you know, in the, where the concession stand is. And now there's like a bar lounge that you can come early and hang out before your theater's open and sit around, drink, and then go in and watch the film and stuff. So yeah. And
it's an interesting way to look at it and see how it goes, man. I mean, there's times where I'll love something like that. And then there'll be times where I'll almost miss not the unruly kids, but the exciting yeah. kids. Cause my son, he'll be 8 this year. He's still excitable, but he's fast approaching that age where he's going to start thinking he's too mature, right? Even though he's not. So I'm not looking forward to that too much. Let's hope that people just enjoy the films. And here's the key thing though. We have to pay for the movies, guys. If we want more big tentpole films, you gotta actually give the studio money. And I don't mean a subscription fee, because that goes to a dozen productions, it goes to a dozen licenses, it goes mm-hmm. to everything. So you're, you know, hey, I paid my subscription this month. That counts for that. No, unless you're out there buying a lot of merchandise for that right. that property. Mm-hmm. If you want to support these movies and get them made, and I'm not saying to buy any particular studio's films, I'm just saying buy the movie. My biggest fear, here's my biggest fear. I like some of the behind the scenes stuff that Disney Plus has put on, but we can all admit, the film buffs in the audience and you and I, the glory days of extras was DVD.
Yeah.
And it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. It's dead.
I mean, you know, like I said, it transitioned. We went from VHS, where the previews for a VHS for a movie, and then the actual movie releasing, that was an event. Then when we went to DVDs, we found this whole other thing added on to it, where it was not just the movie, but behind the scenes stuff and all the, you know, commentary that yeah. was taking the movie to the next level. Like, I remember, so I've seen Gladiator well over 100 times, whatever, and, mm-hmm. and stuff. But the
were you audio not entertained the first time? Oh,
you know, the audio commentary, you know, to the ting, you know, but you know, the audio commentary by Ridley Scott. You know, I sit there and I'll listen to that and stuff, and just it for you know, people who are in the movie industry or movie buffs, they love, you know. Love listening to that. But yeah, that's all gone.
Yeah, that's going away. And what we do get is usually very, very sterilized and very, very, oh, we love working on this project. This right. is the greatest project I've ever worked on. This is such an amazing project and cast and crew to be a part of. And then you look at the Phantom Menace documentary making of on the DVD mm-hmm. and there's freaking Rick questioning Lucas's almost every move,
right?
And it's on camera.
Yep. As that was probably the last, like the prequel trilogy, the last mm-hmm. additional,
really
like
in-depth yeah. look at controversial,
yes,
behind the scene, controversial films, but behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And then you look like. And I love the technical side of it too. Like, I love talking, editing, and hearing the director, photographer, photography, the camera operators, the editor. I love digging into all of that. And that's like the only enjoyable part now, because you could still, you don't have to sterilize comments about the special effects or comments right. about, you right. know, the editing process. But you do have to sterilize comments about, you know, the direction, the script, the characters, the actors, and
correct.
You know, so I miss that.
On Disney Plus, man, some of my favorite stuff to watch, probably my favorite stuff to watch besides, you know, of course, Mando and Star Wars, anything new that comes out, are the documentaries they put out. So, like, mm-hmm. Disney Gallery, the behind the scenes of The Mandalorian. That was, mm-hmm. I was just fascinated with that series. And then, you know, they have the other documentaries on there where it's like the Imagineering stories, where it's, you know, the story of Walt Disney building, you know, Disney parks, going from Disneyland, and then, you know, starting the building of Disney World, and Roy taking over, and then, you know, the stories behind all the rides that are, you know, how they're built. Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, you know, he's producing a documentary that's coming out on Disney Plus, that's going, you know, to be, you know, about the most popular rides at Disneyland, Disney World, and the kind of the creations of those. And so, to me, I wish Disney would come out with more of that stuff. Like, you know, let's go Avengers. Let's go, you know, show me that stuff too. Get everybody back together and do a round table and say, mm-hmm. this was the hardest thing to, you know, to put together. This scene right here is, it just enlightens you a little bit more. It makes you appreciate the films a little bit more. Like, it was probably one of the most popular scenes from the Disney Gallery series, when they did The Mandalorian, you know, Dave Filoni explaining Duel of the Fates. And, mm-hmm. you know, everybody sees episode one, you know, they have their thoughts on it, but then Filoni's like, you know, the reason why they call it Duel of the Fates is because, you know, it's a battle between not just Darth Maul and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, but it's a battle for Anakin's future, you know, mm-hmm. and how it goes. If Qui-Gon doesn't die, then does Anakin fall to the dark side? Does he finally get that father figure he wants? And so I remember the reaction on YouTube for that. So many YouTube viewers were like, I never thought of it that way. So it's like, we need more of that. We need to understand what the director's coming from and why they're thinking these things. Why do they name some of these things? And it just gives us more information and enlightens us more.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Star Wars is our very next topic. But before that, we got to take a quick, like, 30-second break from our sponsors. So take it away, Grow Generation.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. For all of your cultivation needs, Grow Generation has the right products, service, and staff to make your grow successful. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
All right, man. Let's keep it up with our Star Wars coverage. Look, most of this stuff we're talking about is on everyone's front page already. However, if you still know absolutely nothing about Obi-Wan Kenobi's upcoming show and you want to keep it that way, Trent, we're not talking stories. We're talking characters that have been announced. We talked about R2-D2 and C-3PO appearing in the show. We know that Leia, a young Leia, what is she supposed to be, 10, 11, something like that, mm-hmm. is going to be in the show. And then we found out about a couple of Inquisitors. Who do we think all but know is playing an Inquisitor right now?
Moses Ingram and mm-hmm. Sung Kang. And we think Moses Ingram is the ninth sister, right? And I the numbers, they always get. One's a sister, one's a brother. I think Sung Kang's fifth brother, Moses Ingram, ninth sister. And we'll get all 12 in a, you know, mm-hmm. in type deal. Like, not necessarily, I think it's going to be more like Knights of Ren.
Where maybe there's like we see them in the background and four get arc.
You know, could it be very similar, a similar shot as we see as Empire Strikes Back, where Vader's on the Star Destroyer with the bounty hunters, you know, mm-hmm. saying, go find Han and the Millennium Falcon. And the only bounty hunter we really see after that is Boba Fett, you know.
Right,
So, you know, we'll probably get that. So. But we're, you know, Jordan Mason, us, we're very confident Sung Kang is an Inquisitor. We're also very confident that Moses Ingram is an Inquisitor as well.
Now, I know a lot of fans across Reddit, especially, and I'm not too familiar with Reddit, so I'm speaking third hand. So, Mike, Chucky, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a lot of fans that seem to have some decent theories on some castings for a few Star Wars shows coming up. Are you tracking any? I know Cam's usually the guy that watches that, but are you tracking any good fan theories out there
for Kenobi or
Ahsoka or anything like that? I don't know. That was a name Cam mentioned. I'm trying to make sure I don't say the wrong thing anywhere. So
we broke the story. Yeah, we broke the story that Agent Callus is Alexander Callus from Star Wars Rebels will be in Kenobi. Makes sense, you know, at this in the timeline frame with Rebels and where Kenobi's at. It takes place just before Rebels, and so Agent Callus is an Imperial agent, and basically his job is to find, you know, rebellious insurgents, right?
Right.
He's not necessarily after force sensitive people. He's after in trying to stop the rebellions in these little cells from growing. And so it makes sense there. The casting, we're like 90% confident on this. Jordan Mason kind of alluded this to as well, that Rupert Friend will be playing Agent Callus. There's been some pictures of him with blonde hair. Agent Callus had blonde hair. The chops is the only thing. He has like the chops that come down to here, but everything else is shaved off. That's they're wondering, can he grow the full chops out that way? But yeah, that's been the fan favorite, because we had 2-3 months ago the Kenobi cast or the core cast be released, and it was just, you know, which actor, you know, what actors are going to be in the series, but nothing of what role would they be playing.
Right. So, a few were obvious because they've already been in the movies or something before, but yeah.
Yeah, Ben and Owen Lars, and, you know, of course, Hayden Christensen playing Darth Vader / Anakin Skywalker, and Kenobi, you know, being Ewan McGregor. So from what's left, if we're putting Sun Kang as a Inquisitor, and of course Moses Ingram as an Inquisitor as well, but if Agent Callus, then really the only, if you do, you know, your elimination and stuff, Rupert Friend is kind of who you're left with. And so we'd heard that name beforehand, you know, playing Agent Callus. You know, Jordan Mason tweets out a photo a little bit after we break the story, kind of, you know, alluding to that. So, you know, it's interesting. The amount of positivity is for having Agent Callus and Kenobi has been, you know, pretty amazing. I thought it would just be kind of when we broke the story, I thought, this would kind of be on the level of R2 and C-3PO being in Kenobi. And
where it's like, that's interesting.
It's like, interesting, yeah. And kind of figure, but this has gone to the next level. I didn't realize. So in the last season of Star Wars Rebels, if you haven't seen it, spoilers, Agent Callus joins the rebellion. He converts over, you know, the morally conflicted person, you know, finally decides to join the rebellion and then changes his hair up. And for some odd reason, he got the nickname Hot Callus, you know, because there was this big, you know, interest in, you know, how hot he was and stuff like that. So,
American audiences are what are we going to call the H word over here?
I don't know, but
the H tie. Yeah. Anyways, go ahead.
But so when we broke the story, it is amazing how many fans, you know, of all ages, you know, going through Reddit, going through social media and stuff like that, are all excited about this. You know, you know, I would say this is pretty damn, well, not close, but it's probably second. So when we broke the Hayden Christensen coming back to Kenobi, or coming to Kenobi as, you know, Darth Vader / Anakin Skywalker, that of course went through the roof. There, you know, the amount of positivity for that. Having not just, you know, Rupert Friend, you know, as but saying Agent Callus will be in Kenobi, that just is the next level. And there's a big audience for the Star Wars Rebels show. There's a big fandom. I know that when it ended, it was great because, you know, Filoni at Star Wars Celebration, when he announced that season four, I can't remember how many seasons. I think it was four.
I don't remember. Five went on Netflix and then they did six.
No, that was Clone Wars. Netflix.
All right. Oh,
Clone that was Clone Wars. Okay. Wars. Star Wars Rebels was like Ezra Bridger, Kanan Jarrus, Sabine Wren and stuff. And so the thing is four. So, but when Filoni, you know, announced it, his big main reason was, is that he felt that he had so much time with the Clone Wars animated series. And when it got sold to Disney and it was abruptly ended, and he didn't get to tell his ending of the story, he promised himself from here on out, any other project he works on, he's going to make sure that it ends with a story that this never happens again. And so that's, you know, we get the ending to Rebels, but then it's also leading off to, you know, things like Ahsoka and the new show and everything. But that show in such a short period of time, five seasons, I apologize if I'm, you know, for those who know more than me, it's amazing how many people were, you know, excited for it. The Star Wars Rebels panel at Star Wars Celebration for the last season when I was there, it was jam-packed. It was, you know, they Celebration was in Orlando that year, and they had a room equivalent to Hall H, and that thing was slammed packed for Rebels. And so Clone Wars, I knew, had its own following. It is, it's amazing because, you know, with Rebels, it's all new characters, pretty much. You know, you get Ahsoka and you get Darth Maul, and you had one season with Vader in it. But but the core group, all new characters, and the amount of Star Wars fans that just gravitated to them. Like Ezra Bridger has a cult following. And I know that when that announcement breaks, you know, that Ezra's coming to, you know, live action, it's going to take – we saw what happened with Ahsoka. It'll take, you know, to the next level for the Mandalorian. Yeah, because
right now most people assume we're going to see him. There was even a lot of rumors about him in season two of the Mandalorian.
Correct.
And that's because of the Ahsoka connection. Correct. And then the Thrawn connection, which was another theory and rumor leading into – anyone that's new, thank you for listening. Please hit subscribe or follow and understand I have an impediment due to a brain injury. But right now with Thrawn and Ahsoka, we're assuming Ezra's in, but you're right. If and when someone can make that confirmation, it would be massive news. And hey, hopefully one day we'll be able to break something big like that. You know, that'd be awesome. And the best way to make sure you can catch that is to follow us on Twitter at @LRM_exclusive. Check out the website, of course. And like I just said, subscribe and join us, follow us on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. With that being said, Shockey, What might we learn soon? Like, do you got a feeling anything is on the verge of being released at all?
No.
I mean, are we looking really just looking for like, what is it, August or April? Celebration next
May.
Year.
May 26th. So you have EA Play this weekend coming up. Right?
There's that game. They announced open world.
So EA announced, their Star Wars Twitter account announced this week that there will be no information, new information on Star Wars games, right? The message in the tweet was, we look forward to you know, exploring all this stuff next year. Everything Star Wars related that hasn't been announced will be announced at Celebration. They're basically, this is the culmination of it, of the next stage in Star Wars. I don't even expect Investors Day in December, when it's traditionally happened, where we got this new, you know, online debut from Bob Chapek of all the different projects that they're working on. I think it's going to be heavy Marvel. And I think that everything Star Wars is trying to be kept under wraps as much as possible for Star Wars Celebration. Now, we're getting Book of Boba Fett in December. So we'll probably, you know, we'll get a trailer for that. I'm assuming sometime mid to end December that you'll have episode one. I think it's on track to do 9 episodes. Some people have said 12, so it could be, you know, a lengthier season and stuff.
But these could also be 22-minute TV
depending, depending on how they want to cut it out and everything, you know. So we're getting, you know, I think minimum 9, and then, but depending on how they edit things and how they want to tell the story, it could be 12. So that takes us into January, you know, February-ish. And then, you know, we get this kind of lull area. We could have Andor. I know that Andor is still filming. I know that Andor is not near end of production. It would be a rush. I could, you know, we could see something, you know, being done about Andor. Maybe it's like half, you know, half of Andor season one is this time period, and then we get the second half this time period. But like Breaking Bad did in its final season, where we got half a season one, you know, in one part of the year, and then the second half was done later because filming and, you know, wanting to keep the story under wraps so much, do it that way. There's some rumors that they're trying to film as much of Andor season one and season two as possible to try to have it so it's almost close back to back. You know, so type deal.
We know they're not afraid to share the volume.
Right, exactly. They're definitely sharing the volume. But Andor's done and a lot of live action stuff,
on location. Was it Book of Boba Fett or Kenobi that was at their location filming?
So Book of Boba Fett is in California, was filmed in California, the volume. Andor is in Pinewood Studios, and they have a volume there as well. Kenobi, there's part of it being filmed in the volume in California and part of it being filmed in Pinewood Studios.
Right. That was the one that potentially crossed over.
Right.
That's kind of like the last thing we think. And I'm one, we think, and it's all but out now that, in various levels, Mando season 3 has been in production, and we've had that feeling and talked about some interesting tweets and buzzwords behind the scenes that it may have been filming as early as, you know, like April, March, like way back at the beginning because of those crossover things with other productions, but it could also just be like, hey, we need this person this for this reason or that reason. But regardless, I wonder when the Mando's season 3 release date will be revealed. Do you think it comes at the Investors Day or at the end of Book of Boba Fett, like we got Loki season 2?
I think we're getting end of Book of Boba Fett. I think so.
Mando to return, I am
August super confident. Well, and we know too that Din Djarin is going to be in Book of Boba Fett. There's so much that has already leaked out, crew shirts and everything that, you know, from filming that shows Boba, Fennec, and Din Djarin together and stuff. And I know people are like saying, well, Pedro Pascal is doing Last of Us right now. Right. But at the same time too, he's wearing a helmet. His stunt double can do a lot of the movement and then come in and you get Pedro to come do ADR. You know, look what, you know, James Earl Jones was not in the Vader suit. No. You know, did the voiceover for it and stuff. You know? So it is possible, guys, for those who doubt me on it. But we know, you know, I think that we're going to get one of those like kind of like, oh, hey, Mando season 3 is right around the corner, you know, 2 months, 3 months out. My money, right, if I've got big money going down and I'm in my Vegas, right, and you're asking me put a bet down and everything on what I think's going to happen. So we get Book of Boba Fett. Could we possibly get Andor right after? Yes, but I don't think that's the smart money to do because we're going to probably get Book of Boba Fett into February if they're smart, right? So that leaves March, April, May, 3 months. Well, we don't have, you know, any Star Wars. Could you put a show in that 3 months? Sure. You know, the smart money would be Andor because you don't really need a big event for that. Say, hey guys, remember, you know, this character from Rogue One? We did a show about him. You guys will like this, you know, if you're into the Rebel spy stuff. But when we get to May 26th, that weekend is going to be you're going to see at the end of Book of Boba Fett, you know, hey guys, Mando season 3 will be coming out May 26th or whatever, you know, during Star Wars Celebration. They're going to premiere it that night. If I've got money down and or I'm in charge of Lucasfilm marketing, I am premiering something at Star Wars Celebration. I'm getting as many people I can to that event and also streaming it.
Yeah, you know, can we get a bookie to like DM one of us so we can start taking some money on this?
Yeah, we might open up a gambling service here. You know,
there we go.
Barstool Sports did it for themselves. We might do it for, hey, when do we think this trailer is going to come out? Type deal.
That'd be fun.
But marketing for me, if I'm doing Star Wars Celebration, I'm holding all my chips for that because that's where people are coming. They want to come to the panels. They want to come to, you know, to see these actors and stuff. So if you give it all away beforehand, how many people are going to come to this event?
Yeah.
Not many. So you premiere Mando season 3. You then drop the Kenobi trailer as well. And then you say Kenobi coming in August, September, or whatever type deal. So, right. You know, that's
and then show me, your first footage for Ahsoka to close out Celebration. Yeah. And it's like a 15-second teaser. And maybe
we'll more likely have the Rogue Squadron trailer. Or, you know, some footage from that.
Yeah.
Because they'll start filming on that soon. Yeah, there. That's the one. That's the moneymaker for Mr. Kyle Malone right there.
That scares the hell out of me. Almost as much as our time crunch, man. We got one last big thing to talk about. Yeah. How wrong I think everyone is about this synchronized time thing with Wanda and Loki. In all seriousness, I would have loved a real connection here. Could have done it with additional sound effects. Some people have pointed, there's red in the timeline break. Well, there's already red in the scene and the colors are bleeding through and stuff. Potentially, yes. Likely, in my opinion, no. But one TikToker has made something go viral. I have not verified the synchronization. I don't know anyone that has. Everyone seems to just...
Yeah, there's a couple of YouTube videos.
Person. But so even if there is, the idea is that a couple of events line up in the last edits of WandaVision final episode and Loki final episode. And people assume that when Wanda becomes the Scarlet Witch, accepts those powers, that's when the timeline breaks, because that's when He Who Remains starts talking and we just crossed a threshold and stuff. I pointed out that WandaVision takes place in 2024, after the blip is done, Tony snaps, so we're mm-hmm. 5 years past Endgame, or not Endgame, but Infinity War. Loki he that remains is both in all of time, outside of all of time, and is able to witness all of time. He that remains was born in the 33rd century. Again, Wanda happening in the 21st century. There's no reference point to tie it. In reality, if you think outside of four dimensions and you get that, you're able to step into, what is it, like the sixth dimension to observe all possible universes that could theoretically exist within four-dimensional time-space. Even looking at it at that, it's like, yeah, sure, any moment at that point syncs up with Loki and the breakdown. You could sync it up with Captain America lifting the hammer. You could sync it up because all of time is happening and all of time has happened. Right. So is it possible that connection is real? Maybe, but if it is, without some additional anchor, a sound cue, an actual visual cue, not two episodes that happen to sync up. Cause again, without an anchor point, a reference point, all of time is happening around him. So literally you could theoretically sync that event up with any major moment. You could sync it up with Cap dancing with Peggy if you wanted to and getting his happy moment. You see what I'm saying? So that's my only thing. I like the idea of her being a cause, but there's this one TikToker that set off this wave without a reference point. It seems like it was either, if it is real, it's either an afterthought where like, hey, see if you could do this, or B, potentially kind of like Peter Parker being the kid in Iron Man. I don't know where that came from. It's just a retcon. Potentially they could see this being popular and retcon. And if they do that, it just feels like a missed moment, because you start wondering what is the threshold? What did cause him to not know? Why was he trying to rush them to make their choice? Because technically, WandaVision already happened. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I get you on that, and I understand your thought process on it. Like when you do a deeper dive and you say, okay, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. I think it was just more like for the casual audience member, like, hey, this is a, you know, they're synced-ish up. I will say this though, after doing some more like research on it and stuff, we still haven't gotten Spider-Man No Way Home right. and the events that go from that. Because mm-hmm. from what we, you know, leaks have come out or rumors have come out is that what kind of causes the whole Spider-Verse to happen is that if, what was it, Far From Home, at the end of Far From Home, we find out that everyone knows who Spider-Man is, you know, J. Jonah Jameson reveals that it's Peter Parker. So we've heard that it's going to be kind of a storyline from One More Day where Peter asks Strange to wipe everyone's memory that knowing that he's Peter Parker. That also could be that also
you
could
gotta,
be
no no
yes no. You gotta think about
God no
I know right but you also think that could be another event that happens where Strange alters the timeline for Peter, and that could be another Nexus event right there, you know. So I think is it all gonna like coincide with each other? No, but you know, there's a reason why the Scarlet Witch is revered as the most powerful one. There's a reason why Kang, you know, kept his, you know, universe intact so he could keep the other, you know, Kangs, you know, from destroying the multiverse. But I think that the last piece of the puzzle comes from Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, I mean, that makes great, perfect sense. You start teasing the possibilities of multiverses back in phase two, mm-hmm. really start leaning into it in phase three with Doc Strange and of course, Endgame, and how they explain how multiple universes/timelines can be created. Right. But oh my God, you said like the only words worse in Marvel Comics to me than Secret Invasion is One More Day.
Yeah, look, it's a very controversial storyline.
I bleed JMS blood cells. Like they all have J. Michael Straczynski's name tattooed on my blood cells. He's one of the greatest writers of all time. There's a reason his relationship over at Marvel was tenuous after One More Day. There's a reason a lot of Spider-Man sales tanked after One More Day. There's a reason why Joe Quesada had to do so much fucking
to fix that storyline. And it's still to me it's still not even fixed. There's still
And I like Slott, but Slott didn't
but let's go back to it this way. You have to remember
he did good with Brand New Day as best he could.
Yes,
but even then, some of that was trash.
One of the most controversial moments in comic book history was Civil War number 2, mm-hmm. when Peter unmasks himself. You know, and that was like, no, that's stupid because now everybody knows. And of course, it goes down the storyline: Kingpin trying mm-hmm. to kill Peter, which ends up, you know, almost killing Aunt May, which then leads to One More Day, which then mm-hmm. leads to the aftermath of that. That just was a snowball effect. Oh, let's, because remember, Civil War number 2 was shocking. Like that was so. Of course, number 1 was an all-time one of the best-selling comic books of all time. But then number 2. Almost surmounted it because you had the image of Peter without his mask on, you know, unveiling to the world, I'm Spider-Man, doing kind of an Iron Man, you know. So
it's, I think I've got it now, because I had this theory with Manny about No Way Home and right. the future of Spider-Man and the MCU. For the longest time, I've been, you know, sounding the alarm, especially after Venom did so well in China. Please, China, reevaluate your relationship with the source material for things like Transformers and Marvel, because those aren't doing so hot. Okay. Come on now. Stop giving Venom your money. Anyways. No, I've had this fear that they're going to take their ball and go home. Vince Sicara and Rothman, and I think even Fox at one point, last name, I can't remember his first name, but big execs over at Sony were saying things in 2019, like, oh, well, you know, we got the Marvel handbook. We know how Feige does things. We can make good movies too. Like literally words from their mouths. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but you can find these quotes. And that those comments and recent things have made me really feel like, when they walked in to talk about renewing the deal, they had no good faith. Sony had every intent in 2019 to take their ball and go home. Now I think what's happening is Marvel has basically, there's a new agreement, and I think we're going to see Spider-Man take a pause in the MCU. Mm-hmm. Now that you say one more day, it all lines up perfectly with having people forget Peter is Spider-Man, and he slips off into an alternate universe, leaving the door open for him to one day potentially come back. But I think that's what's happening. I don't think we're going to see necessarily a completely separate Spider-Verse. I think they're leaving the door open for him to come back later. What do you think? Is Sony taking the ball and going home for good, or are they just going home for the night?
No, I think they're going home for the night until the next big Avengers movie, and then Peter comes back type deal. I mean, yeah, with Miles, some of that. Yeah, you're gonna see. It just kind of. I think we got, you know, Wanda, and the Nexus event. That you have Loki, the Nexus event. That the last major thing before we get to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is Spider-Man, No Way Home, and. In that title, No Way Home, that tells us something, that he can't go back to the way things were. Like, he mm-hmm. can't go back. So that's one more day. That is exactly what the storyline is on One More Day, is that he chose to do it, you know, to take off his mask in Civil War and expose himself. And Mephisto basically says, you can't go back to that. You can't go back to that event and take that back. So you have to live with this new reality. And so, I trust Feige. Don't get me wrong, but being in the relationship with Sony, that's what it is. It's money. It's driven by money. And so you have to write a storyline that allows you to have the possibility of bringing Spider-Man back, not for a feature film, not, you know, just to, hey, here he is in Avengers type deal, you know. So he's part of the universe still, and it explains why now he can go and be in a Sony film with Tom Hardy and other, you know, Morbius, you know, with Jared Leto and stuff. Yeah. So now it kind of like, okay, that kind of, because of the multiverse event, now that explains how, you know, Peter Parker, this version of Peter Parker, is able to go through and stuff. We kind of got it with Into the Spider-Verse, you know. Sony's attempt at it.
Problem, man. It's like, look, I like the cartoon Spider-Verse movie. It's great. It's amazing. I love watching it. Mm-hmm. I watch it more than I do anything except Far From Home, because it's got Mysterio, and that's my, like, all-time favorite comic book villain. I love Mysterio. But I didn't want to see it in live action. I had high hopes that Nick Dahl from Breaking Geek here at the Genreverse Podcast Network, LRM YouTube channel. I liked when he had the theory that it was going to be like more of a Sinister Six thing than a Spider-Verse thing, but it doesn't look like it.
No, it doesn't look like it at all.
Yeah. There's a lot of rumors, a lot of multiverse crossovers, and, you know, to wrap it up, I don't quite like how it seems that they might be picking from the bones of Fox and potentially Sony to create a new universe, right. It seems so disingenuous to be like, oh, well, we're going to take this, this X-Man, this Fantastic Four character, this, you know, Deadpool character, and mix them all together while leaving the rest of them in their own universe. It's kind of like doing 2015/16 because of all the delays. Secret Wars again. Like, right. I don't quite like it, but in Feige we trust, right?
Yeah, I mean, he tells a great story. He organizes it really well, so you know it'll be interesting. He's managed this whole Sony relationship so far. And we've gotten, you know, some people say the greatest version of Spider-Man. To me, I know that I'm in the very, very small minority that I prefer the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man version. It's the most accurate to the comics, okay? That's the only reason why I'm an old school guy. I have, besides, you know, the first appearance of Spider-Man and Spider-Man number one, I pretty much have all the original comic books from it. So, you know, granted, he's older. He looks a lot older, but you know, we get the Gwen Stacy storyline. I'm a big fan of Gwen Stacy, you know, and so like to get that, I thought that was pretty much on point. I'm not saying that they are amazing movies. I'm not saying that, but to me, it's like, okay, if I've got to pick between Tobey Maguire's, Andrew Garfield's, and Tom Holland's, I understand why so many people like Tom Holland's Spider-Man. I get it. It's, you know,
best of both worlds.
Yeah, right.
It's not a perfect Parker, not a perfect Spidey, but it's good enough on both.
Right. You know, the Sam Raimi.
I mean perfect.
Yeah. The Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, you know, Sam Raimi at the helm, you know, of course they, you know, they did
good for their time.
Yeah. It was very good for the time. But I remember being at, what was it, high school, middle school, when I went and I was like, where the hell is Gwen Stacy? Why is Mary Jane and, you know, it already in love with Peter Parker? This does not make sense, guys. And having Mary Jane fall, you know, when Green Goblin drops her instead of, you know, Gwen Stacy. It's just like, damn it, they ruined everything. But then
wanted us staying Mary Jane and Green Goblin all summer long.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. But, you know, but Spider-Man 2 with, you know, Doc Ock in it is I think the greatest Spider-Man film out of all. But, like, when you talk about that actual character, so it's – and it's being truthful to the comic books, and then Andrew Garfield's is the closest one. Not perfect, but closest one there. You know, and I was hoping that we would see a Spider-Gwen movie jump off from there and stuff, but – I think we will get that eventually, but yeah, you know,
they're going to do isn't Spider-Gwen getting a series, like an animated series? One of the Spider-Verse characters is supposed to get
Spider-Gwen. There's a second into the Spider-Verse
or Ghost
film.
Spider or whatever. Yeah.
There's the Spider. There's a movie Spider-Woman.
Yeah. Jessica Drew.
Yeah. Jessica Drew, doing that one and stuff. So, but I think the animated Spider-Gwen from Sony is getting her own animated series. See. And stuff, so yeah,
we shall see. Everyone else, you guys can see us here on the Daily Cup of Genre every Monday through Friday, live on Thursdays like it is right now. Thank you for everyone that has watched us and joined us live. Please hit the subscribe button if you are listening to the replay on audio, wherever you get your podcast from. Hit that follow button. We really, really appreciate it. Help us keep all this wonderful content for you guys for free. Check out our sponsors, GrowGeneration.com. If you're watching us, you can see the social media information down below. We have a Marvel podcast, a Star Wars podcast called The Cantina. Keep your guys on the website today and tomorrow and through the weekend. That's all I can say. And please follow us on Twitter because you never know. Breaking news could hit any time. And we might even be able to plan some things about The Cantina and Star Wars news. I'm just saying it might behoove you guys to follow some of this sweet social media accounts. All right. Shockey, what's going on with LRMonline.com these days?
You know, we're trying to get some more information out for you guys. I know, you know, some of you are excited about all the Star Wars info. We should have one more big story for this week, and then it might be a little bit more time for us to find another scoop around and stuff, but you know, we're getting there and trying to get all that information out. We're very careful at what we release out there because we don't want to spoil too much of a good thing. So the little bit of stuff that we do share with you guys, we hope that you enjoy it and stuff. But if there's something else that you think we should be covering, let us know. We'll be doing a Ted Lasso podcast starting tonight, and then, you know, continuing tomorrow, because of course season 2 premieres tomorrow on Apple TV. So look for, if you're into Ted Lasso, look for that. You know, and then everything else. So we have a great amount of interviews that have been posted up recently from our amazing interview crew. Cam's holding it down with, you know, a lot of the written articles, and Christine as well. And then, of course, you know, Kyle here managing all the different podcasts, and the podcast crew is doing an amazing job. So we're looking forward to continue to expand and getting as much out there as possible. So if you can give us a like, you can give us a follow, subscribe, it helps us out at the end.
It does. All right. The big guy over there that runs the site said it all. Thank you guys so much for listening today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Manny should be back, hopefully.